How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts as we are every Sunday at 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network Series, Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Of late this summer, the show's been airing on Channel 92 on your Sirius Satellite Radio. So if you have to sit around the computer listening to the show, you might want to check Sirius Channel 92. Might be able to check it out there. Also, the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. Search Sports Byline USA or Wrestling Observer. Listen to the show in your car or however you listen to your internet radio. Also, check us out on the Sirius Satellite Radio app as well. We got so much stuff to talk about today. It is Sunday, July 14th. Therefore, we're going to be talking the Money in the Bank pay-per-view from WWE. WWE Money in the Bank. We got so much stuff to talk about in the preview for this show. As usual, there are sources taking odds, taking bets on this pay-per-view, and the betting lines are very interesting, suggesting two big winners for the Money in the Bank ladder match. Perhaps not who you'd think, perhaps exactly who you'd think. We're going to talk about that here on the show and run down every single match on the pay-per-view. A full preview of Money in the Bank, which takes place moments after the show goes off the air, only on pay-per-view. Also, speaking of pay-per-view, we're going to be talking to Mike Sempervivi about the Invicta pay-per-view last night with Chris Cyborg versus Marlos Kunin in the main event. Rematch of a fight they had a couple of years ago when Chris Cyborg, I presume, looked very different than she looked last night on the pay-per-view. Maybe, maybe not. We'll talk about that. Plus, Silva Weidman. We talked about it last week, the pay-per-view from Las Vegas. I was there live. I did a review of the show. Mike Sempervivi was not on the show last week, but we're going to get his thoughts on that historic fight, and we're going to talk about the historic rematch, which has taken place on December 28th in Las Vegas. It is a massive double main event with the Ronda Rousey-Misha Tate fight on the undercard. God forbid somebody gets hurt. That may be the second biggest UFC of all time. We're going to talk about that and so much more. You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We got so much stuff to talk about here today. 2 hours every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network. Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Today we are going to be talking the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. It takes place moments after the show goes off the air. One of the big pay-per-view events of the summer leading into WWE's SummerSlam pay-per-view in Los Angeles next month. Also going to be talking about the Cyborg-Kunin fight from last night. Weidman Silva 1 and 2. So much other news. And Mike Sempervivi, how are you doing today?
I'm not too bad. I've actually, it took a week to get my hearing back from Bob Backlund yelling at it last week in Ocean City at the WWE house show, but that's coming along very well.
Let's talk about that house show. You went there with your youngster, and you not only got to see Bob Backlund yelling at you, but you sent me a photo. I think I talked about this on the air. It just said, Avery with chicken. And the Briscoes were there in the front row. They'd been given tickets by the office, and just there visiting, have not signed a deal with WWE at this time. But tell everybody about the show.
No, just actually enjoying it there in the front row with the whole Briscoe clan. Papa Iron Mike was there, and if he's probably got more charisma out of anybody else in that whole group. It's just an amazing, they are an amazing bunch of people as far as personalities go. But this is the first house show I've been to since the famous Juan Cena debut in Salisbury a couple years ago when the Nexus angle was going on. And since that time, they've actually made a big upgrade to everything. A couple months ago, I guess, they started doing this. Because I'm telling my son, you know, look, this isn't like TV. You're not going to have the entrance videos and the big Titantrons and fireworks and all that sort of stuff. But they did add in a new kind of a Raw entrance where they had it all lit up and different lights going off. And they actually have interactive Twitter polls that you can deal with and backstage segments and things like that. So it really is very nice, and I don't know how much it costs them, but it's a really good idea to bring that TV experience to the arenas, and they did a really good job with that. Now, most of the crew, half of the crew was in Japan and in Asia last week. So that was John Cena and The Shield and Ryback and Jericho and guys like that. But the main event of this was Alberto Del Rio and Dolph Ziggler. And I guess really the second biggest match on the show was the one they had before intermission, which was Randy Orton and Big E Langston. So it's one of those very formulaic house shows. It's like 2.5 hours, boom, they're done. And by the time you're out of the arena, they've pretty much already got stuff torn down and ready to go. But it was really nice, and it was a surprise to see Bob Backlund there. It was a real surprise for my son, who he scared on the way into the arena because he's just screaming and going nuts. And I'm thinking, do I really want to spend $30 for a picture with myself and Bob Backlund? Nah, I can't do that. But you know what? Maybe Avery will. But as soon as we brought Avery up there, they said, everybody get in on the picture. And, you know, Bob Backlund comes up to you, and you shake his hand, and he's like 1977 Bob Backlund. You know, very nice and respectful, and oh, how you doing, and very humble and kind. And then it comes time to take the picture. And he grabs me around the neck, he grabs my wife around the neck, and he starts to squeeze. And as they take the picture, then he goes into Bob Backlund 1996 mode. And he starts going nuts. And he's talking about how great it is we're all here tonight. We got family. Family, ah! And as he's doing that, he's cutting off one side of Jessica's neck. So she's about to pass out if you see the picture. You see Avery kind of looking around like this man's completely insane. And you have me just sitting there smiling because he's already blown out my eardrum and I don't know what else to do besides smile.
Now, was Bob Backlund, I presume he was just there on his own, right? Or was he, does WWE pay him to be this crazy, or what's the story?
They pay him to be this crazy. I think when you go to house shows, just depending on where you are, I know I think Hillbilly Jim has done this a couple times, and different guys in different areas they'll have coming in to basically sell the gimmicks, because one of their big things they do at the shows is you can get a picture taken, which looks like you're on the cover of the WWE magazine, and they'll have like Sin Cara or Rey Mysterio, and then you can stand in there with a belt, and they make this photograph for you, and that costs $20. And then Bob Backlund's there, and whoever's signing it, it's an extra $10 to go ahead and do that. So he was there doing that, but he was making some money on the side as he gave me a little card, which on the back of it was a business card, and it was him hawking his gym in a box.
The gym in the box.
The gym in a box, which I think has got the legendary wheel. I think you can do the step test with it, and it's, well, it's a gym in a box.
How much is it?
I'm not sure. I believe it was like $39.99. I'll have to double check this as we go to break, and I'll find out exactly how much it was.
I'm trying to find the picture right now of Bob Backlund choking out you and your. Yep, there it is. He's got a good grip.
Oh yeah, and look how bright red he is.
He doesn't look too bad for what is he? 64 now? 63?
He's 68. I think he's 64, going on 40. He is. I mean, he is every bit in remarkable shape, and I know there's always. You know, the whole thing with, you know, never did a drug, doesn't drink, doesn't smoke, any of that stuff. But I tell you what, he's the poster boy as far as living a clean life and being able to be 64 going on 40. Just, he's absolutely amazing. Doesn't move badly, any of that sort of stuff. He's just, he really is a complete physical freak, as well as just being kind of a freak in general, because immediately after the picture was taken, he goes right back down into normal, you know, just kind of quiet, eccentric Bob Backlund mode.
He, you in this picture look exactly like Phil Baroni.
Well, you know, it's the Italian genes, or the hard living, one of the two.
Spitting image. A spitting image. Now, are those Avery's belts, or did Bob have belts to pass around to the,
Oh, no. When you take the picture, they have a whole slew of belts laying there. They have the Divas title, they have the WWE title, they have a bunch of the title belts laying around, as well as the Money in the Bank briefcase.
Is that what your wife is holding? Has she got the briefcase?
I handed that to her, and that really upset Avery, because he really, after the picture, decided, you know what, I really wish I could have held on to that briefcase. He's upset over that and the fact that he bought a John Cena shirt, knowing darn well he should have bought a Dolph Ziggler one. So he had some buyer's remorse after that.
So let me get this straight. Your son would have preferred to hold the briefcase that probably guaranteed the title, as opposed to what he is doing here, which is holding the actual title.
Yeah, he's way too influenced by, you know, he actually asked me if he could watch the WrestleMania that they had in Orlando with Flair. I think it was the WrestleMania 24, so he could watch Money in the Bank. And it's, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, John Morrison, Shelton Benjamin, all those guys flying around on the ladders, He'd rather actually have the briefcase than the title.
So is he getting Money in the Bank tonight?
Yes, he is.
About that. All right. Well, let's talk about Money in the Bank. We do have two ladder matches here and a number of championship matches as well. Let's go from the bottom up. We've got a this will actually be taking place as the show airs in the second hour. So you can watch that while you're listening to this. The Shield is going to be facing the Usos for the tag team titles. I just presume the Shield wins. I'd be stunned if the Shield lost the titles to the Usos, especially in a dark match on the pre-show. I suppose anything can happen. Your prediction?
It's definitely the Shield. I mean, nothing against the Usos or anything like that. And they are picking up. And as far as fan support goes, and they've been guys who have been out there really grinding away, and they've really improved a lot over the last couple of years. But it's just, it's insanity to take the belts off the Shield, like you said, especially on the pre-show. And I have a feeling that's exactly why this is on there, because they're not going to change the titles, and they get that out of the way, you know, without anybody batting an eye.
We've got AJ and Caitlin for the Divas title. This feud's been going on for a while, and it's funny because they, long time ago, they had this idea that AJ and Ziggler and Big E were all going to be champions at the same time. They were going to have AJ as the women's champion, Ziggler as the world champion, and then Ziggler and Big E, they were talking about putting the tag titles on them as well, so they'd all have gold. Now we've got this weird situation where they've made some changes. Ziggler, I guess, is a babyface. Well, he's a babyface is actually the best I can say. So he may win the world title tonight. AJ may lose the title. They may break up. Let's start with AJ and Caitlin. What do you expect to happen in this match?
Yeah, I mean, you could really overthink this match and tie it into Ziggler's and try to figure out where it goes from here, but I'll actually go with AJ winning, and I don't know how that's going to play into Raw, but I'll go with AJ winning and beating Caitlin. I don't think, obviously AJ was supposed to be the dastardly heel, and you're supposed to get a lot of sympathy for Caitlin, and that just hasn't worked out according to plan, so if it's up to me, I just go ahead and leave the belt on AJ.
All right, we're going to head to a break. We'll continue this preview when we come back. We got a lot of matches to talk about here for the Money in the Bank show airing after this program. So hold that dial. Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for 2 hours every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Got a lot of stuff to talk about today. The Money in the Bank pay-per-view taking place moments after the show goes off the air. We are here to talk all of the matches on that program. We've already talked about the dark match, and here we are on AJ and Caitlin. I am picking AJ in this match. I don't know what they're doing with Caitlin. Looks like they're turning her heel, but if you watch the program of late, there are a lot of people on this show up and down the card where I know what they are, but you never know it if you were a new fan watching the show, who's a babyface and who's a heel, aside from who's being cheered and such. On Raw Monday, you had a CM Punk versus Randy Orton match where they're both babyfaces, and then Daniel Bryan, who also is a babyface, ran in and beat both of them up, which made no sense. I mean, it made sense because they're all in the ladder match, but it was still kind of weird. The fans didn't really know how to react. Caitlin's just been out of her mind of late. AJ is a heel, but Caitlin in storyline is acting more heelish. She's more crazy, I guess. And I do expect AJ to retain the Divas title and Dolph Ziggler perhaps to win the title from Alberto Del Rio. What are your thoughts on that match?
Yeah, you know, they've been the show we went to, and I think they've been doing this all the way around the horn. At least they did it in Wildwood, and they did it a couple other places on this last tour. Was, you know, Dolph Ziggler being knocked out to end the no DQ match that they would have with Alberto Del Rio. And I think the way he's been positioned, and obviously he's going to be a face if he's not really officially already. I think the fans have him that way. I guess he's not technically positioned that way or anything like that. He just falls into the category, as you were talking about, with Shades of Grey. But I think he goes ahead and beats Alberto. You know, the question obviously is, what do you do with Alberto after this? And that's a good question. You know, he's going to be mired in the mid-card, I have a feeling, for quite some time. I don't know exactly what they're going to do. I don't think, frankly, under the circumstances, it's all that bad of an idea. if he doesn't join Zeb Coulter's United Nations, and alongside Swagger and Cesaro and things like that. And you basically, I would say, it's not like a four horsemen sort of thing, but at least together as a group, because I feel as though Cesaro, it's either going to be Cesaro or Barrett, and if it's Cesaro that wins his Money in the Bank ladder match, those two guys protecting him and then, you know, setting up stuff a long way down, you know, as far as somebody turning, I think, would probably make the most sense when it comes to Alberto, because he's really going to be, you know, stuck in the mire after this. If he wins this match, again, what do you do with him? Is there any big interest in seeing him against anyone? So that's why I'm picking Dolph. And again, this could tie into Dolph and Big E Langston down the line. I have a feeling most of the stuff coming along with AJ, Big E, and Dolph will probably take place on Monday night.
Yeah, it's sometimes they want to shoot stuff on pay-per-view. Sometimes they want to shoot it before the bigger audience on Raw. I think that there's going to be an angle tonight or tomorrow, and it's going to involve Dolph and Big E. I think they're probably doing Dolph and Big E at SummerSlam. I was told that whatever they're doing with Dolph, you're going to know about it tomorrow or after Money in the Bank. So maybe they'll do a deal here where there's backfired interference or something like that, or they could always have Alberto retain the title and then AJ, who retains hers, and Big E get all upset at Dolph, and Big E leaves him laying. There's a lot of different ways they could go, but I think they're probably going to be setting up Big E and Dolph for SummerSlam. That's my guess. Plans change regularly. I was told, for whatever this is worth, and it's kind of interesting because if you've been following the WWE odds, yes, there are places that take odds on WWE matches, which is preposterous since it's not real. But they do, and the odds for Money in the Bank have skyrocketed for Randy Orton and what's his name? Sandow. Sandow and Orton are the new favorites. I believe Randy Orton is now a minus 2,000 favorite for Money in the Bank. It was originally, a few weeks ago, Daniel Bryan. He was the odds-on favorite, but I think it was last week the odds just all the money massively went in the direction of Randy Orton. So he's now a minus 2,000 favorite. Damian Sandow is the odds-on favorite for the world title match. We believe that this is a result of WWE, people who work in WWE getting the finishes and then making bets, which, I don't know. I don't even know how these things even work, why it's even... I just don't know how the odds makers... I guess I don't understand this whole thing, but it just seems to me that, like, how do you make any money if you're taking bets on a worked sport where people involved in the company who know the outcomes can go vote? But anyway, it's funny because aside from those massive swings, I've been told that the plans for this show have largely stayed completely intact for at least the last week or so, and they've had a lot of creative meetings. So they seem to have a direction leading into this show in SummerSlam that has remained largely unchanged. So I guess we'll see what happens. But that does suggest that Orton is going to take the WWE title Money in the Bank contract, and Damian Sandow is going to be taking the world title Money in the Bank contract. Your thoughts on those two choices, Mike?
I really like Damian Sandow a lot. I don't know if they just shouldn't do this in another way. I don't know. I would rather have Cesaro hold on to it for right now. I really would, and then have Sandow kind of build himself up, you know, a clean split from Cody Rhodes, not a turn on or anything like that, but they just split and go on their way and build their way up. I just think Wade Barrett, I don't really know what the deal is with Wade Barrett. You know, he comes across well, he's got a presence, he gets a good response, he's great on promos. I don't know what it is with him that they don't like, or something he's done, or whatever it is. You know, to me, those two guys, Barrett and Cesaro, stand out as far as being the ones that should take it right now. Now, I'm completely fine with Damian Sandow having it and the fact that he won't like it, and he'll buy himself a brand-new Halliburton for its place. And
leather, I hope.
Yeah, you know, there's so many things you can do with that comedically. And again, I like him as a character, and I think he's come along pretty well. So seeing him in there against someone isn't going to hurt my feelings down the line as far as him having the briefcase, because I can see him being a future champion. I wish they would build him up a little bit better. And again, that to me, Cesaro and Barrett would be more ready right now.
The participants, just for those wondering, for the world title ladder match. It is Wade Barrett, Cody Rhodes, Damian Sandow, Dean Ambrose, Fandango, Jack Swagger, and Antonio Cesaro. And for the WWE, it is CM Punk, Daniel Bryan, Randy Orton, Sheamus, Rob Van Dam. Maybe there's going to be an individual added. Kane was supposed to be in that match, but the Wyatt family took him out on Monday. And the two names I've heard as possibilities, if they replace him, are The Big Show or Rey Mysterio. Rey Mysterio, obviously, would be the high flyer, doing the high spots. Big Show would be the base, replacing Kane, who was the other big base. So those are possibilities. I mean, I think there's a chance Rob Van Dam could win, just because they've... you know, Raw was built around the return of Rob Van Dam. He's going to be one of the biggest stars on the show. So I could see that. Sometimes when they do a replacement, the replacement ends up winning. Just as a big surprise, that would, you know, if you're worried about the odds makers taking a bath or making too much money or however it works, somebody explain these odds to me. This how this works with the odds makers. I'm just baffled. Taking odds on pro wrestling is just like, it blows my mind. But anyway, you could just have a someone who's not even, you know, in the match, win the match, and then, you know, you've got a big surprise that nobody saw coming. And yeah, for the world title match, Wade Barrett would be good. Sandow, I guess you could make it funny, but I don't know if anyone's going to take him seriously as a potential next champion at this point, or Cesaro. So those are my thoughts on both matches, but right now it looks like Randy Orton and Damian Sandow, but we'll see. They could change anything at the last second.
When it comes to the Money in the Bank ladder match on for the WWE side that Orton looks to be winning, if you're going to have somebody come in and have the surprise win it, to me it would have to be like John Morrison. I don't think you could do it with Mysterio or with Kofi Kingston or the Big Show. To me that's the only way somebody, you know, if they're going to replace someone and they're going to win it. Unless it's, you know, because Henry will win tonight and Big Show will put over Mark Henry as far as being a dominant reign or something like that. But again, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, I don't think, leading into Survivor Series either. Or, I'm sorry, SummerSlam either. But Rob Van Dam, I think all he's got to do is have a spectacular performance. He doesn't have to win it. And frankly, if I'm them, I don't have Rob Van Dam win this. Let him be in for a little bit. Let him do what what you need him to do, which is be strong, but essentially put over all these other guys, which he's going to be doing as things go along. So as long as he's spectacular and you know he's going to be and he's going to get the reaction in the whole nine yards and he's competitive up till the end, I think that's all you need out of Rob Van Dam. And put me in the camp of I'd rather see Daniel Bryan over Randy Orton. But then again, I guess at some point you're going to have to do something that shakes up Randy Orton. We've heard this whole thing about him going heel for months on end. And again, he doesn't look to have a solid direction right now. So he always gets a good response at SummerSlam. And he's somebody you're going to need to be stronger, I think, than what he is. So if he does win it, it doesn't hurt my feelings. But Daniel Bryan, I think, should be the guy that would have it.
All right, we've also got Curtis Axel and The Miz. Both men have lost a lot of late. It's one of those classic matches. Who is the biggest loser? Or who is the most successful loser? Who is the least successful loser? I don't know. One of these men is going to lose one more time. Hopefully Curtis Axel retains. They seem to have this idea of, let's make the titles mean something again. And they're trying to put the belts on guys that they're kind of pushing a little bit, as opposed to guys that just go out there and do jobs, even though both these guys have done some jobs of late. Curtis Axel, his winning streak ended, so I presume he's getting his win back here today. It's kind of a make good. Hopefully he retains. They push him hard and keep the belt on him for a while, try to build up the Intercontinental title again. I just wish champions wouldn't lose unless it was like to set up a match that they're going to win. I don't like champions losing multiple matches to multiple guys. Just kind of not my thing. Devalues everything, but hopefully Curtis wins. We'll get Mike's thoughts on this match and more when we come back from the break. The show's starting in about an hour, everybody, so get ready. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for 2 hours every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, 794, Channel 92, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can also check us out on the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. Search Wrestling Observer Live or Sports Byline USA. You can find us there. The Sirius Satellite Radio app on your smartphone as well can also get the show every single Sunday. And we do put the show up at WrestlingObserver.com as well. Immediately after the show goes off the air, we also stream it live at WrestlingObserver.com. WrestlingObserver.com is a place to go for all the latest news and info in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We have daily radio shows. Mike just did a show with Dave Meltzer last night, which magically only went 80 minutes. I'm stunned. Dave and I are going to be back up later on tonight, as well as tomorrow after Raw. So if you love audio, if you love wrestling and mixed martial arts audio, this is the website for you. We have a subscription area. It's $10.99 a month. And for that price, you not only get all of the brand new radio shows, but you get every single show that we have ever done in our archives. Thousands of shows dating back to 2005. There's so much stuff to listen to. You can go back and listen to Money in the Bank pay-per-view recaps dating back to the very first pay-per-view they did. The very first Money in the Bank pay-per-view. We've got so much stuff up there. More than you could ever listen to. If you wanted to try to listen to it every day on the way to work, in the I was going to say in the shower, but you probably shouldn't be listening to audio in the shower. But when you're working out on the treadmill, wherever you listen to your audio, you'll never run out with a subscription to WrestlingObserver.com. Just $10.99 a month. Check it out, everybody, and listen to the free shows as well. We got a listing of our latest free radio shows on the right-hand side of the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. So head up there and check that out. We are previewing Money in the Bank. I gave my thoughts on Curtis Axel versus The Miz. Mike, what are your thoughts on this match?
I'm with you. I don't like champions losing as often as they are. And a guy like Curtis Axel, too, who, you know, needed all the help he could get if they were going to have him ascend. And really, they haven't. He's just one of the, just like all those other guys who are wrestling in those two Money in the Bank ladder matches. I mean, they're just, unfortunately, they're all lumped together in a blob, you know, big glob underneath. So it's disappointing, and it's, yeah, I don't like The Miz. Again, nothing against The Miz. I'm not The Miz's biggest fan. But I hope he gets his win back, and I hope they actually make it just a really, you know, strong, decisive one, because, again, he could just use it, and if he's going to have a title, and he's going to be somebody you brought up and, you know, told everyone you want to bank on, then go ahead and do it.
All right, we've also got an interesting match here. Chris Jericho and The Ryback. I can't remember the last time Ryback won on pay-per-view. I don't know if anyone can.
Why are they wrestling again?
Why are they wrestling again?
No, I mean, why are they, again, tell me why these guys are actually wrestling on this pay-per-view.
No good reason.
Okay.
They did zero to build up this match on Monday. It's just a match. I wouldn't be surprised if it's just a backdrop for introducing Vicky Guerrero as Ryback's new manager. Jericho probably losing on the way out. God forbid he doesn't. Ryback's career has just like fallen off a cliff. Ever since that Hell in a Cell pay-per-view where he was put in the Hell in the Cell, it was his streak against CM Punk's streak. And Jericho actually, at the time, Jericho was lobbying for Ryback to beat CM Punk and win the title. And the decision was made to beat Ryback. His streak ended. He then went on a several pay-per-view losing streak, which is now extended to like 8 straight pay-per-views. And now he's finally got a guy that he can probably beat, because Jericho's probably going to be disappearing for the summer. If he doesn't, I don't even know what to say. I don't know what's going on with Ryback. I guess they've just lost interest in him as a big guy. He has limitations. If you've listened to the Todd Martin show, he'll tell you all about him. But still, it's a guy that was pushed hard and was kind of getting over for a while, but now he's just another big dude. What are they going to do with Ryback here tonight?
Yeah, just another one of those guys. Again, I'm with you. I assume he gets the win over Jericho for the reasons you just mentioned. You know, he's the one sticking around, and again, he could use it anyway. He hasn't gotten a big win in a while, so yeah, he goes ahead and beats him, and I don't know how Vicky plays into this or if at all, but again, I guess tomorrow, if nothing else, if they don't do anything tonight, I'm sure they're going to do more with Vicky and Ryback tomorrow. And it's amazing to see that sensitive side of Ryback.
That's right. He was quite the gentleman when he told Vicky that you deserve better. It is wood in a manner as possible, he said it. But, yeah. I like that segment on Monday with Vicky. Am I the only one, Mike?
No, I actually liked it as well. Vince's facial expressions and Vince being Vince pretty much made it, although it's amazing. You know, Vicky, you give her lines to read off a cue card, and she screws that up, you know. Obviously, her issues, some of them are very well documented, but as far as her going absolutely bananas at the end of that, I thought that was great, and I'm one of those people who's been in the camp of Brad Maddox, not as much as some other people, but I do appreciate the talents of young Brad, so I'm looking forward to seeing what's going to happen on Monday.
What did you think, stepping away? Actually, we'll talk about that after we get through. Let's finish off the pay-per-view preview, then I'll ask you about the Wyatt Clan. We've also got John Cena, Mark Henry for the WWE title. Mark Henry, I don't think he's winning the title here tonight. I don't know if Mark Henry will ever become the WWE champion. Kind of sad, but hey, guy's had a great career. He's been a world champion. You know, what can you do? I like Mark Henry. I think this is just a stopgap between now and SummerSlam, where John Cena defends against Daniel Bryan. We'll see. I don't expect this match to go on last. If Randy Orton is winning the Money in the Bank, maybe they put that one on last so a babyface win can close the show. Or maybe they'd put on Mark Henry and John Cena. I mean, John Cena's going to win, I'm sure, but still, I don't expect this to be like a phenomenal match. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they'll over-deliver. They have in the past. Your thoughts on the match placement of this particular battle, and do you think Mark Henry has a chance of walking away with the title?
Well, I think if he could have carried on a little bit more momentum after that first week, after the interview with Cena, I think that was, you know, you could look at it and go, okay, well, maybe we can change plans and take this all the way up to SummerSlam. And I think with the crowd response, unfortunately, it didn't quite work according to plan. I think obviously a lot of people like Mark Henry. I don't know if the people who are going to shows when they go touring, I don't know if they necessarily care about seeing Mark Henry as champion, you know. It certainly hasn't seemed that way. So I would keep the belt on Cena. Now, who knows? I'm not sure when's the last time somebody has cashed in the same night? Because if this goes on last, there's a possibility where Mark Henry completely destroys John Cena. Cena gets the win, but, you know, maybe Henry puts a beating on him and attacks him a little bit after the match as well. And whoever wins the Money in the Bank briefcase could go in right then and there and cash it in.
That's not a bad idea. I mean, you could, if they're doing Daniel Bryan, John Cena at SummerSlam, I mean, you could have Daniel Bryan, get the briefcase, cash it in against Mark Henry after Henry beats Cena. And then you have Cena challenging for the title at SummerSlam, and maybe do Daniel Bryan and Mark Henry on Raw a couple times to, finish off that feud. A lot of ways they could go. But we'll see.
When is Brock Lesnar scheduled back?
I don't know. He may be on the show tomorrow. I'm not sure, actually. But obviously, he'll have to be doing something leading to CM Punk and Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam.
Well, and that's, you know, CM Punk winning the briefcase, Cena winning the match tonight, Punk going to cash it in, and Lesnar getting in the way of that somehow. I mean, that's possible, although then you're kind of wasting, quote-unquote, a Brock Lesnar appearance. Went unannounced on the pay-per-view.
That actually would be awesome.
And, you know, I don't know if that's something that is really an appearance thing, or you could tie that in with, you know, tomorrow, where it's not actually a notch against, you know, his appearances. But again, if you want the fastest heater for that, well, there you go.
Yeah, if Punk got the briefcase, John Cena retains, Punk goes to cash it in after Mark Henry lays out John Cena, and he's getting ready to go. The referee rings the bell, and Brock Lesnar just comes in and destroys Punk with the F5, and Punk wins via DQ but doesn't get the title. And that sets up, of course, SummerSlam. I think that'd be an awesome setup for SummerSlam. And, of course, Paul Heyman could plead innocence. I didn't know. Yeah, that would be awesome. That would be awesome.
In fact, they could even play into that, too, with him appearing tonight, that no, look, Brock's contract states he was not supposed to come back until the Monday after Money in the Bank. I didn't know. What was I supposed to do, Punk? What, you know, you say you believe me, now you say you don't? You know, and again, playing that direction, because that's still been kind of left open with, you know, Heyman and Punk.
I hope they do that. That would be awesome. I don't know. I think that'd be great. It would be wasting an appearance by Brock. But I mean, if all you were going to do was have him show up on Raw and do a contract signing or something like that, I think it'd be a much bigger deal to shoot that kind of angle here and then just take him off his Raw contract signing appearance. Just he shows up here, he destroys the guy, he screws him out of the title, and you don't see him again until their match at SummerSlam or maybe the go-home show.
Oh, and Punk absolutely goes bananas, and that's even more because you could tape something with Lesnar tonight and act like it's taking place tomorrow, where he's just talking down to CM Punk and he's not even in the building, which of course sends CM Punk probably after, you know, Axel or Heyman or destroying a guy to kind of get his manhood back on Raw tomorrow night because of what happens with Lesnar the night before. I think that makes perfect sense.
We got an email here from Emerson, by the way. He says that tonight marks 1 year since Ryback last won a match on pay-per-view. He beat Curt Hawkins and Tyler Rex in a handicap match. He was not on SummerSlam. He was not on Night of Champions. And he has since lost at Hell in a Cell, Survivor Series, TLC, Royal Rumble, Elimination Chamber, WrestleMania, Extreme Rules, and Payback. Wow.
Like alternate universe Goldberg.
It really is. It is. He's working on 82 straight losses, 84 straight losses.
Forget that what is. That's amazing and obviously a real ringing indictment against, again, when we talk about the blob of dudes, you know, Ziggler, Biggie Langston is going to join that, Axel, Miz, Alberto, Swagger, Cesaro. It's all the same guy. It's all the same guys in the same spots. I think, you know, Sheamus has been dragged down back into that. Orton is simmering on the edge. Bryan's up a little further than he was. Obviously, Punk's up there. But, you know, Christian's even lower than those guys. And again, it's just that big blob in the middle that nobody cares about, and it's because of those types of things with Ryback.
I think that Orton is a little bit higher now than he was like 3 months ago. Because they've put him in with Daniel Bryan, and I don't know if it's like it's like friendly competition in the match to see who can get a bigger babyface reaction. But like Randy Orton has been a better babyface in the last 3 months than I think he's been at any other point in his entire career. You know what I mean? He's always been
that
babyface that seems like he's uncomfortable being a babyface. He doesn't like it. But like the last 3 months, I mean, he has been an awesome babyface. And I think part of that is just being on the same team with Daniel Bryan and fighting to get an equal reaction and also having matches with Daniel Bryan that are awesome. So I think Randy Orton is higher now than he's been for quite a while. And we'll see what happens if he ends up winning the briefcase here tonight. It's possible that they said you put over Daniel Bryan clean via submission on Raw, the most watched show, and we'll give you the Money in the Bank briefcase in return. It could have been something like that. Or maybe he just really likes Daniel Bryan and he agreed to do it for nothing. Who knows? But anyway, we're going to head to a break, everybody. When we get back, we've got tons of stuff to talk about still. Another full hour here on the program. So don't touch that dial. You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network Series Satellite Radio, Channel 94, 794. Of late, it's been airing a lot on Channel 92, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We are bombarded with news today, as we are every Sunday. We've been talking the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, which takes place immediately after the show goes off the air from the Wells Fargo Center, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Rob Van Dam, of course, working the show, going to be super over in Philadelphia. I expect this show to be... this show, everybody, could be the sleeper pay-per-view of the year. Money in the Bank has stolen the show in terms of pay-per-views over the last few years. I think actually, last year's Payback was phenomenal, if I recall correctly. But Money in the Bank, I mean, you got two Money in the Bank ladder matches in front of a great crowd. They should be awesome. I just think the show could end up being really, really memorable. We'll see. But Philadelphia is always a very hot crowd for WWE. They're going to love Rob Van Dam. It's going to be a fun show. And Mike, the Wyatt family, not on this show. Is there any possibility you believe that they could show up in any of the matches?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think Philadelphia, you know, obviously the Baltimore fans are smart, and they busted out a Husky Harris chant there at the end. But I think first trip into Philadelphia, I would bank on rolling the dice and having them in there doing something that screws up, you know, screws up something, or that just them making their presence known, I think would probably be a really good idea, because I am in the camp of thinking that entrance was really cool. Now, obviously, I think the beating went on maybe for a little bit too long, and again, it's them beating up Kane for who knows what reason, but as far as the whole entrance goes, as far as Bray Wyatt himself goes, I thought it was really good and something they need to build on, so why not have him out there tonight doing at least something? I don't want to see him in a match, but at least doing something.
All right, we're going to head to our hourly break. In 7 minutes, we're back with another full hour of Wrestling Observer Live. We have so much news to get into, so check back in. Back in just a moment, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208. This summer, it's been on a lot on Channel 92. Check us out on the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone, Sirius Satellite Radio app on your smartphone. You can also check us out at WrestlingObserver.com. We stream live on the front page at 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, as well as airing the replay immediately after this show ends. You can download it for free on the website as well, up at WrestlingObserver.com, so make sure you check that out. We spent the first hour talking the WWE Money in the Bank pay-per-view, taking place moments after the show goes off the air from the Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, talking about the Wyatt clan. Mike, before the break, we were talking about their potential appearance tonight. I think they could show up just for a promo. I don't know if they're going to attack anybody or not. But I had the idea a couple of days ago on the Todd actually kind of had this idea, but I had a slightly different twist on it. When the Wyatt family comes out, I believe that they should dim all of the lights in the entire building like they did on Raw. And Bray Wyatt comes out with his lantern, and they shine one single light from the ceiling down onto the victim in the ring. And so you can only see the victim, and then the Wyatt clan attacks him from out of the shadows. You don't see him coming until it's too late, as opposed to all the lights going out, and when they come back on, they're in the ring with the guy. What do you think of this this idea?
I thought that was the Lance show this week. As soon as I heard that, whichever show it was, I said absolutely right, because him having that lantern there, just rocking back and forth, not saying anything, and the guy doesn't know where it's coming from. He's just looking at Wyatt sitting there with that lantern. Again, and the music works. As far as all the aesthetics and all the non-wrestling BS that goes around that the gimmick, I think it's really, really good. And again, what you mentioned right there, I think would be perfect, because it lends to that creepiness. The guy sliding out of the jungle and, you know, out of the bayou there and going to attack you. You don't know where it's coming from. It makes it a little bit different than the Shield or anybody else who does runs in the WWE.
Back in just a moment, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We spent the first hour of the program today talking the WWE Money in the Bank pay-per-view. Takes place immediately after the show goes off the air. Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. If you cannot be there live, you can watch it on pay-per-view. Dave Meltzer and I are going to be back later on tonight, only at WrestlingObserver.com, with a rundown of the show, all of the matches, news going into Raw tomorrow night, all of the news from the weekend. It's going to be a fun time. You can also check out the show, if you're a subscriber, that Sempervivi and Dave did last night up at WrestlingObserver.com right now, and will be up tomorrow night after Raw with a brand new show as well. So tons of audio up at WrestlingObserver.com. Make sure you check that out And Mike, we spent the first hour talking Money in the Bank. Let's talk some other news now, including the Invicta show last night, which aired on pay-per-view, the big move to pay-per-view with Chris Cyborg and Marlos Kunin in the main event. You saw the entire show. Tell us everything there is to know about Invicta.
You know, at $14.95, I thought it was a hell of a deal. It really, really was. Maybe that's what made me pop before the show and put me in a good mood. But when I went to order it, I don't know what I was expecting, but I guess I just wasn't expecting them to keep the iPay-per-view price that they had. I thought they'd bump it up to maybe $24.95 or something like that. But at $14.95, I thought it was a hell of a deal. Now, it was almost too good of a deal in the fact that they tried to cram so many fights on. So there was no time for interviews or long-form personality pieces. They were just very, very short, like 30-second bumpers of videotape in between the fights. They rushed things on way too fast, I think. And I think that may have burned people out by the end of the show. And there were 9 fights total, and they would have been better off with just maybe 7 of them. That and the night got progressively, I don't want to say worse or anything like that, but the main event was Marlos Kunin and Cyborg Santos, which is a rematch from a fight they had a couple years ago where Cyborg completely destroyed Kunin. She did it again here. It ended up going 4 rounds. Kunin's turtling defense that she had for Cyborg was very frustrating, and that it was very effective, but it was essentially, you know, Cyborg would take her down, either get frustrated and try to bring her back up, and then they go to the ground again, and Cyborg would pound away. But Kunin would turtle up so well that Big John McCarthy couldn't stop the fight, and it was finally in the 4th round where she was able to kind of penetrate through Kunin turtling up and splitting her hands and landing enough punches on her face where McCarthy could actually jump in and stop it. But at no point was it a competitive fight. Santos is just too big for Kunin and just way too powerful. The semi-main event, Claudio Gadella fought Ayaka Hamasaki, and these were straw weights, which the 115-pound weight class seemed to be the focal point of the evening as most of the fights took place in that class. But Gadella just completely blew through Hamasaki, who was never in it. Hamasaki was actually supposed to face the strawweight champion of Invicta, but that she got hurt and had to pull out. So this ended up being a number one contenders match, and Gadella took it away from her, a completely dominant performance by her. There were a couple of exciting, you know, showcases, though, that made it good. The first two fights, I think, were very exciting, each for their own reason. The first one was Rose Namajunas, who is Pat Barry's girlfriend, facing off against Tisha the Tiny Tornado Torres, and she really lives up to her name because it was 3 rounds of her just, you know, knees and kicks and punches and just being like a whirlwind, with Namajunas every once in a while landing the harder shot, believe it or not, not landing anywhere near to as many, but would land the harder shot and actually try to jump up and take Torres's arm or try to get a submission. So it was an exciting fight. It was very competitive, even though it was relatively one-sided for Torres, who won a unanimous decision. The second fight that took place was jumping to the other category of a nasty knockout, as Miriam Nakamoto in the 135-pound weight class knocked out Duda Jankovic in 2 minutes and 8 seconds. So that was a really exciting way to start off the show. And then Mizuki Inoue followed against Rowdy Beck Hyatt, who... Hyatt's got a lot of fans already. She's a very exciting fighter, but she put up a game performance and fought a close fight. But Mizuki, in a way, was probably the most impressive performer all night in the fact that she's 18 years old. She's already had a ton of experience in Japan. I believe they said she was like a black belt at like 4 or something like that in karate. I mean, she's just absolutely amazing.
At 4?
Yeah, it was something incredible. Brian, she came out in the 1st round, and she looked like a Floyd Mayweather-level boxer, moving her head. The hand movement was absolutely incredible. She's 18 years old, and again, she, you know, karate and jiu-jitsu is her background, but her boxing was, it was blow-away, and she's going to be somebody, as Invicta goes along, that you're going to have to bank on. I mean, after the fight was over, it's like, you think to yourself, you know, they have this little bit of a tie-in with the UFC. Can you imagine a fight dropping off a UFC show and you're able to use Invicta and have a fighter like that pop up on your pay-per-view? I mean, it was just, it was really an impressive performance. The most impressive performance after that was Leslie Smith, who is from Cesar Gracie Jiu-Jitsu and hangs out with the Diaz brothers. She had a ton of charisma. She came out to Blurred Lines by Robin Thicke, which was entertaining enough as it is. But she came out and just completely, she's another one that could pop up on a UFC pay-per-view and nobody could feel bad about it because she gives you your money's worth. She just completely went after Jennifer Maia for all three rounds and was just completely relentless. And she's going to face off against Barb Hancock, who's the current flyweight champion coming up. And she was absolutely fun to watch as well. So some really good things that came out of the night. And then, again, the worst problem that I had was the fact that there were so many fights on there and you didn't really know who anybody was, and they never gave you a good chance to kind of explain, you know, this is why this person is here. You didn't have to go into like full, like 5-minute, you know, recaps on everybody. But at least a little bit more, you know, information would have helped. And the announcing team was interesting as well, too, because it was a relatively quiet crowd in Kansas City, which they noted was, you know, they tried to note was like a Japanese crowd. But it was a very quiet crowd, and the announcers were Mauro Ranallo, who was relatively reserved last night, alongside Julie Kedzie and King Mo, who, you know, Kedzie...
What a crew!
Yeah, well, Kedzie fell into the problem that a lot of fighters have when they start becoming announcers, and she wouldn't talk. She would just sit there and watch the fights and get into the fights, and she knew she was doing it, and she'd have to snap herself out of it. The one I was surprised about was King Mo, because he is so gregarious and he can, you know, cut a promo and be very outgoing. He was really reserved, so I don't know who was producing him. You know, the whole show seemed to turn out pretty well, but whoever was producing him, I think probably should have, you know, cajoled them to speak a little bit more and get them more into it and get after him in the headset. Some people have,
I think, with let me say something about King Mo. I think with King Mo, it's like he's to me one of those guys where when you turn the switch on, he's very gregarious, but when you don't, he's very reserved. Basically, just like you said. I mean, I've done interviews with him, and he's just like, sometimes you do an interview and he's just a dude. You know what I mean? He's not out of control. He's not wild. He's not crazy. He's just like he just is a guy. But then at other times when he gets in the mood or whatever, he's King Mo. So I think, you know, he's just one of those guys. He's not like a Chael Sonnen who's like, he's always on. You know what I mean? He's always on no matter what he's doing. He's on. Although even Chael has done our show before, and it's like you try and get stuff out of him, and he decides he's not going to be Chael Sonnen on that show. But I can see what you're saying about Mo.
Well, yeah, it was too much Mo Lawal and not enough King Mo, and with Kedzie being so quiet and with Mauro being relatively reserved, you know, didn't drop a whole lot of Ed Whalen or Jim Ross references till later in the show. I think he had one Dean Malenko one early, but he was more relaxed. So, again, with those two being so quiet, it really stuck out a little bit. I had no problem with my feed. There were some audio issues that, you know, I forget what they call it. Somebody posted it that basically... it sounds like squeals and farts a couple times during the show. But I never lost the picture, which apparently some people who have Comcast and people who have Cox Cable, I guess, ran into, as well as the iPay-per-view feed. But as far as mine went, I didn't have any problem whatsoever.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment talking more. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can also check us out on the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. Search Sports Byline USA or Wrestling Observer. You can check us out, the Sirius Satellite Radio app on your smartphone as well. WrestlingObserver.com, we stream it live and put up a replay immediately after. So check out WrestlingObserver.com. And a lot of different places to check this show out. We were talking the Invicta show last night, the Chris Cyborg-Marlos Kunin fight. And Mike, any final thoughts on the show before we talk another big MMA event?
Not really, other than to say, again, at $14.95, I think if you have the money right now and you see the replay up there, I do think it's worth ordering. I think you absolutely will get your $15 worth. And even though, there again, the complaints I had as far as maybe the lighting of the place went, and the sound and the interviews and some things like that, overall, as far as the product goes, they did a really good job. And it's kind of tough for them. They seem to be in a position where, you know, I don't know if they – I would love to see them on Showtime, although I don't know what kind of support they'd get from Showtime under the circumstances. I would hope it would be good, but, you know, them being on another outlet is tough because, you know, an Oxygen or a women's channel, something like that would probably be perfect, but, you know, who would watch them? You know, it's a channel people aren't used to watching. I hope they can actually kind of fit in somewhere or get some corporate sponsors, because at $15, I'm sure this pay-per-view didn't do a whole lot of buys or anything like that. So if they can get some corporate sponsors to help them a little bit in funding some of these shows, I think it would be a really good thing, because I'm not sure how long they're going to be able to go on a normal pay-per-view at $15 a head and really no one for Cyborg to fight. There's always going to be some really good fights on the card, but it's the name values what's always going to hurt them.
Last week was the Silva-Weidman fight. I spent a whole show solo talking about it, actually, which I believe that was the first show in the history of Wrestling Observer Live that I ever did solo, dating back to 1998, believe it or not. So that was something else. But, Mike, you saw the show, and what were your thoughts on the finish? What were you thinking in the final moments of that fight?
The fighters were right in some ways. You know, it's funny because we talked about it all into the lead-up of, you know, it was, I want to say manufactured, because there were a lot of fighters that really believed that Weidman could beat Silva, and they said that a long time ago, and they've been beating the drum for that. But, you know, the UFC sold it that way, and there were a lot of people, you know, especially casual fans that I know, who came up to me and asked, you know, really, does Weidman really have a chance? You know, we talked a lot about that. You know, how much were people really going to believe, you know, in the general public and Chris Weidman? Obviously, we heard the stories. We heard about all these fighters saying this is going to be the case. But really, you know, was this a little bit of a sell job from the UFC? And it wasn't. And you know, obviously, he had a little bit of a rougher first round. But Anderson Silva, you know, went back. A lot of guys do this. Roy Jones always did this in boxing. And it's just... Some guys, I'm trying to think of who, Ricardo Mayorga was famous for this, you know, come on, hit me. And, you know, dropping the hands and doing the whole shtick and all that stuff. And it's just always really embarrassing when it backfires, and that's what happened. I know a lot of people were screaming work, and they were saying, you know, this has got to be a fix. It's not a fix. Anderson Silva was just stupid. You know, it's a little bit entertaining when he does it, and the guy misses, and you hit him with a three-punch combo, but it kind of sucks when you're the one who gets knocked out and put on your back and then eat another one on the ground in your illustrious title reign, which, you know, again, Chael Sonnen, he could be credited for anything. It's turning around what people thought about Anderson Silva, because if you recall, after the Damian Maia fight, I think that was the one in Abu Dhabi, where Dana White was so upset, he said he's going to be the first champion that ever fights on the undercard, and you'll never see his fight. You know, that's how upset he was. And Chael, basically, just by being Chael, turned Anderson Silva's whole image around and helped build him up. And Silva lost a lot of points with that loss to Weidman. So I will say this, I think it's going to build to a bigger rematch. But as far as how the night ended... You know, history ended, and that's kind of sad. I think GSP's streak's far more impressive than Anderson Silva's, although Silva's destruction of opponents like Forrest Griffin and stuff like that, I think, you know, it's not like he can take a whole lot away from his title reign. It's just kind of too bad it ended in such a, you know, a schmucky way.
Now, it was announced, actually, first we should talk about after the fight. After the fight, Anderson Silva said, he was done fighting for the title. He was tired. He wasn't going to fight for the title anymore. He actually what the hell was his name? One of his teammates, Andre Galvao, had done an interview. And he said that prior to the fight, Silva had been talking to the team about how this might be the end for him, win or lose. He was thinking of retiring. And so when Silva made his statement afterwards, it was essentially exactly what Galvao said he had been talking about before he'd done the fight, that win or lose, he was going to retire afterwards. He was ready to go home, ready to be with his family, tired, whole nine yards. So there's a video, an Anderson Silva video blog, which actually is awesome. I put it up on the front page. And there's a scene near the end where him and his team are in a hotel room, and it appears that it has just sunk in to Anderson Silva that he lost. And he weeps a little bit, and then he gives his big speech to his team, and then he thanks them. And, you know, this is a guy who, in mixed martial arts at least, had never been knocked out. And he was doing a promo right after being knocked out, and probably in some ways it hadn't completely sunk in yet. But it was not long before he was having a change of heart about this rematch. And in fact, I believe by the next day he was wanting the rematch like now. Must have a rematch against Weidman like in the next 2 weeks. Maybe not that early, but Dana White went and all sides negotiated, and the rematch has already been scheduled. It's taking place on December 28th in Las Vegas. It is on the main event of the card that was previously going to be headlined by Ronda Rousey and Miesha Tate. That fight, of course, is going to be coming off months of the next season of Ultimate Fighter with Rousey and Tate as coaches. And they were talking before they'd even made any announcements about when this was going to take place. Dana had been talking about how he felt that the Silva-Weidman rematch was going to be the biggest show, second biggest show probably, in the history of UFC behind UFC 100. And it's hard to say. Anderson Silva's never been like their biggest pay-per-view draw. But I do think that if you do December 28th, Anderson Silva, Chris Weidman 2 is the main event, and Ronda Rousey, Miesha Tate coming off all of those weeks of Ultimate Fighter, that this could, in fact, be the second biggest show in the history of the UFC. Mike, what do you think?
I honestly think it could do upwards of 1.5 million buys. Now, there's lots of moving parts to this, but and everything would have to roll out well, but it really could. I honestly believe that. Their own internal estimates, from what Dana told Kevin Ioli, is 1.2 to 1.4 million. I know UFC 162 is trending at about, 750,000 to 800,000 right now. I think with the rollout that they're going to have with Fox Sports 1 and all the synergy that takes place, their strongest promotional time from the network comes during football season. This fall, Fox, along with FS1, FX, Fox Deportes, will air more college football than ever to go along with the already strong NFL promotion that they get, from those guys in the NFL. You have the Ultimate Fighter show, with Rousey and Tate, which I think a lot of people, even if they haven't watched it in a while, will go back to watching that one. They have entire night on Wednesday nights. The synergy that takes place with Fox Sports Radio and with Fox Deportes is going to be, big and key for this. They're going to have 24/7s on both main events. You're going to have all the personality pieces that take place up and down on their version of SportsCenter. As well as SportsCenter. I know ESPN usually ignores anything it's not vested in. And they're going to be facing a lot of competition from Fox Sports and from CBS Sports Network and the NBC Sports Network as well, who are going to turn up their pressure on ESPN because of Fox Sports' debut, and they don't want to get lost in the mix. So they're all going to be pulling on, even if ESPN doesn't want to be all in on the show, they're going to use Ronda Rousey and Miesha Tate. It's just too easy. They're not facing competition from anything. There's going to be a soft bowl game that night in all likelihood that's not going to affect them. There's no college basketball really taking place. The NBA barely gets started after Christmas, and hockey, hockey fans are going to watch that, but there's no competition in the UFC. There's no boxing. There's no major wrestling pay-per-view that's going to take place. So after the holidays where you have that disposable income, you got that going for you. You have the chance of inclement weather in places that you already draw really well in. Throughout the Plain States in the Midwest, the UFC does good network, numbers, and they do good pay-per-view buys. If New York and New England is all locked down in the Mid-Atlantic because of snow and bad weather around Christmas time, that's even more of a reason to sit in and order the show if there's nothing else going on. And not to mention the fact they're going to add a third main event to this show. I guarantee you they are, just like UFC 100, where it could be a featherweight title fight. I mean, there's a, you know, after the break, there's a million one matchups you could have to fit in that slot where even if somebody doesn't like Anderson Silva or says, I'm never going to pay for him again, even if they're one of those people who's around a Rousey hater or doesn't believe that Misha Tate belongs in the fight, there'll be a third match put on there. When you sit back and look at the card, you go, well, why would I not order this? Even if I hate the other guys on it, it's a loaded show that I'll probably get my money's worth out of.
And this is a show where, like, I don't even see it so much about do you like the guys or not, but UFC 100, like, if you recall, UFC 100 was not originally expected to be as big as it was, but it was something that the fans created. And UFC 100 wasn't even really about any single match. I mean, the matches were big and everything, but it was about the event, the UFC 100. And I think that this show, when they put all the main events together, that's what this is going to be about. Not any single fight or even a combination of fights, but just that this is the show that everybody has to see, is how it's going to be built. We'll talk more in a moment. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, 794, XM Radio, Channel 208. This summer, you can check out Channel 92. We've been all over the place on Channel 92 as well, and WrestlingObserver.com. Tune in radio app. Search Wrestling Observer or Sports Byline, and of course, the Sirius Satellite Radio app as well. Always check us out at WrestlingObserver.com. Daily radio shows, daily news updates, the Wrestling Observer newsletter, and Figure Four Weekly up there every single week. And if you sign up, $11 a month, $10.99 actually, I'll save you a penny. $10.99 a month, you get access to every single radio show we've ever done. Not only all of the brand new shows, and keep in mind, we had a show last night with Dave and Mike Sempervivi. Show tonight with me and Dave. Show tomorrow night with me and Dave. And Tony the Promise Thomas is going to be up on Tuesday. We have radio shows every single solitary day, and going to be adding more as well. Got a lot of stuff coming up. All of that's available at WrestlingObserver.com for subscribers. Thousands and thousands of shows. Every show that we've ever done is available in the archives only for listeners and subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com. So if you love audio, if you love pro wrestling or mixed martial arts, there is no better site in the world for you than WrestlingObserver.com. So check it out. We got, obviously, this is a free preview here, this Wrestling Observer Live. But you can check out other shows by scrolling down the right-hand side of the front page at WrestlingObserver.com. Check those shows out. They are free downloads, and that's as easy as it gets. You check them out. If you like what you hear, sign up. And literally thousands of shows dating back to 2005 will be available to you, the listener, immediately. So check those out at WrestlingObserver.com. We're talking the December 28th UFC show with a big double main event, Anderson Silva, Chris Weidman, Ronda Rousey, and Misha Tate, and maybe a third big event as well. And Mike, you were talking about how this can be a super mega event, and no matter who is on the show, you'll find somebody that you like.
Well, and that's the whole thing, you know, with all the reasons that I just mentioned, and obviously things like weather and stuff like that, you can't bank on. Things got to fall into place. Nobody can get hurt. You know, the New York media aspect with Weidman, they missed the story the first time around. And obviously, you know, the next big show after that will be Super Bowl weekend, which will have reporters all fired up because people will be in Newark for that show and the Super Bowl taking place. So obviously they're going to want to dip their toes into this one too. I just think, even if it's for what you consider all of the wrong reasons, you know, none of which they have to do with fighting, all of which they have to do with aesthetics and promotion and build up and hyperbole and all that sort of stuff, I really do think if things go according to plan, and I believe in the UFC machine when they want to be strong about something, UFC 100 being a great example of that. You know, the build up to Koscheck and GSP, the build up to GSP and Diaz. Lesnar and Mir, when they do these things right, they usually end up being pretty incredible. And I think for this one, they have no choice but to go, you know, completely all out because they've already, you know, Dana already threw out there a 1-4. I know he said 1-2 to 1-4, but people will be holding, you know, his feet to the fire on that one if it doesn't get close. So he's going to do everything he can. And I think, you know, everything is, it's all hands on deck for this show because it is going to be just such a major one that I think with all of those things, with all of the media that's going to be involved in it, it's more believable that the show's going to do closer to a 1.5 than it is, you know, the people who want to be conservative and say a million, because, again, if nobody gets hurt, if Rousey proves, you know, she's the golden girl to the mainstream media right now as far as how the UFC has presented her and how it's great that this former Olympic champion, you know, with the judo champion mother and, you know, the story of her father and blah, 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 you know, she's always seen in a good light amongst the mainstream media. MMA fans see her a little bit differently in some cases. And if she comes across as a bitch or somebody that's really unlikable on the Ultimate Fighter show, well, guess what? You just spin that story and you show Misha Tate. You don't show Misha Tate mashing her face into Rousey's during the lead-up to the last fight. You show the valiant Misha Tate. You show her in the ESPN body issue. You show humble Misha Tate, who got the chance and wouldn't break out of the arm lock. I mean, maybe I'm looking at this with rose-colored glasses on, but there's probably not a storyline that you can come out of this that you cannot sell to the moon again, and you have so much time to do it, and there's going to be so much promotion behind it. And again, if Fox Sports 1 is going to be a big deal in all this, and I think they're going to put the type of things that CBS did with Mayweather and that HBO did with De La Hoya and Mayweather a few years ago, I think, you know, UFC is going to do that same thing with this show and really have it go nuts. Plus, on top of that, I know a lot of people say, you know, Anderson Silva's crazy and all that sort of stuff, and I know he can be moody and he wants to do his own thing when he wants to do it, but with that said, I think even him and Ed Soares and his side understand the gravity of the situation as far as the money he can make and as far as how everything goes, because he does have a 10-fight contract, and there are going to be a lot more fights for him to fight, that this is going to be a big deal that they need to drive home. So he's going to do promotion that he probably wouldn't be so apt to do before.
You know, the Ultimate Fighter season is going to be very interesting. I don't even know what to even think about this. It's season, what is it now? Season 18. And yep. The show is long in the tooth. And granted, there's still a lot of people watching the show. But
I don't.
I know I don't either. And we're not the only ones. It's long in the tooth. But to me, if there is a show that's going to bring back people to Ultimate Fighter, it's this season. And I know that, like, you know, the show was doing, you know, ratings were kind of starting to dip and dip and dip. And then they had the Brock Lesnar season. Everybody thought the Brock Lesnar season was going to do awesome, but then it turned out that Brock and Junior Dos Santos just like got along, and that to me like killed the season. I think that the show is now you've either got to have, like, I think the only thing is you've got to have two coaches that hate each other, and there's going to be great drama, and it's like obviously we're going to get that here. I don't know if, like, I don't even know how to say this. I don't know if, like, the fact that two women are completely out of control is going to help or hurt the show. You know what I mean?
I think this season, I think it's a unique contrast. And this season you have it. It's going to have a bounce back, at least at first, because it's a new network. People know they either have their camp set up where they like Rousey or they like Tate to go in to begin with. You have men in the house along with women. You have women coaching men. You have all those. You have so many dynamics and so many storylines right off the bat going in that I think you have a save for this season. Now, does that continue on the entire season, or do you get tired of it? You know, that's completely possible. You know, does it last the next year if they have, I don't know, Demetrius Johnson and Joseph Benavidez are the coaches? Do they go right back into the tank again? You know, maybe. I just think for this time around, again, you know, people can call it a setup and say what they want and Kaufman and all that stuff, but from a business point of view, this was probably the best way to go, and how this whole thing is shaken out with Silva and Weidman, it absolutely is probably the best way it could have went.
We've also got a lot of other news I want to get into here today before we run out of time. One of the biggest pieces of news is that the Warrior, Ultimate Warrior, is back with WWE. There's going to be a big announcement tomorrow. It's really not a secret, given the fact that I got an email here from somebody that works I don't know if they work there or they just went by there, but there's a GameStop in Brooklyn that already has a giant stand-up warrior outside the GameStop, which lists him as a pre-order bonus for the WWE 2K14 video game.
Now, is it a stand-up of him, the character, or the stand-up of Warrior, the lecturer?
Well, probably in his original warrior attire. I don't think you need to see the gray-haired, freaky-looking 50-something-year-old. You may! You may! But yes, there's been a deal made with Warrior where he will be in the WWE 2K14 video game. The official announcement will be made tomorrow. But sometimes, like, you know, with books, I know with books and with video games and with promotional materials, sometimes the a store will get them and they're not supposed to be, like, for books, example, books are usually released on a Tuesday. You know, the release date will be Tuesday, July, whatever, 17th or 16th. But they'll get the stuff early and they'll just put it out because they want to sell it. And they're not really supposed to do that. And I'm sure that, the GameStop here was probably told to keep this a secret and not put it out until Monday after the announcement, but they did it anyway. And in the internet world, you can sort of not get away with that anymore because once it's out, it's going to be on the show quickly because somebody's going to email me. So anyway, it's out in the open right now. Warrior is involved in the video game. And I don't know. That could mean that next year in New Orleans, Warrior is going to the WWE Hall of Fame. We shall see.
You can imagine this in Bill Watts territory, the Warrior getting inducted in the Hall of Fame.
The speech that you're going to hear, Mike.
I hope Danny Hodge also gets inducted and chokes out the Warrior, not because I want to see the Warrior get choked out. I just want to see Danny Hodge choke someone out that's not me.
That's true. That's true. Would you go to the Hall of Fame if Warrior was going into it?
I'm not sure how it's going to work. I'm going to try to go anyway because I would love to see. And again, I don't know what it's going to be, but the thoughts of, you know, the possibility of like a Midnight Express or a Danny Hodge, or I'm not sure who else from that area, you know, that's not in that you could put in. You know, the Freebirds I think could go in because they're not in yet. That would actually fit in that area. You know, I guess there's a couple others. It doesn't really matter to me. The Warrior wouldn't be my selling point on going in. It's just getting the opportunity to go to the Hall of Fame is the reason I think I would want to go again. Plus the chances that there's going to be guys who, you know, obviously either I grew up with or who I was heavily influenced by, that would also be getting in along with them.
The other news we have here, WWE Performance Center. We should talk about this very quickly before we run out of time. The Performance Center is opened up in South Florida, and they had a big media day a couple of days ago, and Triple H obviously was there, and this is his baby, this is his child, and they're promoting it as the beginning of a new era for WWE. This opening of the Performance Training Center, it's absolutely gigantic. All sorts of stuff. There are a number of rings. There's a studio ring. There's a kind of a trampoline style ring where guys can practice their high spots. There are studios to work on announcing and promos. And there's a green screen room. There's a medical facility. I mean, this is like a big time Olympic training center style performance center. Obviously going to be used to try to recruit real athletes into WWE. Obviously going to be used to try to train athletes for the future of WWE. They're going to have, I think they listed 75, but I'd heard they're going to have like 100 people training all at one time in this new training center, and it looks phenomenal. You know, what it looks like and what it has to me is secondary to can they actually turn out guys? That's obviously the most important thing. Are these guys going to have the best training possible? Are these guys going to have the best opportunity to learn to work before a crowd? How will this work with the NXT building and tapings and everything like that? How often will they get to work? You know, it's going to be interesting. It's creating wrestlers in a way that have never been created before. And will they be better as a result of all of this? Will they be worse? Will it be a wash? It's going to be a very interesting next several years to follow the recruitment, the development, and the production of brand new wrestlers. What do you think about the Performance Training Center and the kind of wrestlers it will produce?
I adore the concept and the dedication that's into it so far with all of that sort of stuff. I really think it's amazing, and it's been something that's been needed for a long time. I think because of the size, everybody talks about the football players going in, and yeah, they're going to be in and everything, but because the guys can come in from around the world and get a lot of work in and be able to see what WWE needs, I think there's going to be enough room for everyone. I think what they should probably do, though, is because they're not going to set up pods nationwide, is run a bigger swath of Florida, Georgia, and Alabama, because I think that's the only thing that's missing is getting those guys work out there on the road, working in front of crowds every night.
Back in a moment, Observer Live, Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here every Sunday, of course, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Mike, the WWE Money in the Bank pay-per-view is about to begin, and we'll see what happens in the WWE Money in the Bank ladder match, looking like Randy Orton likely to win, at least based on money coming in on Randy Orton, probably bets placed by folks working in WWE and close to the individuals involved. But whether Daniel Bryan wins or not, Mike, it is expected he's going to be headlining SummerSlam against John Cena with the WWE title on the line. Not sure how they'll get there, what circuitous route perhaps. But that appears to be the main event for that show. There's been debate within WWE. Obviously, a lot of the wrestlers would love to see Daniel Bryan get the title. I don't know if he's going to get it. I don't know what kind of long-term plans they have for the championship. But if you had to make the decision, Mike, I suspect you'd put the title on Daniel Bryan. But what are your thoughts on him and John Cena for the title at SummerSlam?
Yeah, I probably would put the title on Daniel Bryan. Not that I'm trying to rip it off Cena or anything like that. It just depends on the situation. But, you know, Bryan's ability to work with everyone. You talked about Orton seeming like he's had the best run as a babyface in ever, and he seems, you know, so alive in his matches. Well, what kind of night off is Daniel Bryan? You know, his run-ins with Kennedy and Kofi and guys like that, you know, are relatively legendary. You know, talk about having a night off with Daniel Bryan. I think that's the biggest thing with him and Cesaro. As far as why I think guys want to see them with the belts is because no matter what happens, those guys are going to make them look absolutely fantastic. And again, that's where I think Daniel Bryan, that's the biggest thing he has going for him. And I'm not saying he's got to hold on the title all the way through Mania or even Royal Rumble, but I think giving him, you know, that when he's at the peak he could possibly, you know, be right now, and I know he's slumped off a little bit, but I think he can carry the ball up on top, and they need guys who can do that, again, to break out of that middle pack that we talked about earlier.
We're out of time, everybody. Have fun watching the pay-per-view. We'll be back later on tonight. Thanks, Mike. Everybody at Sports Byline, we'll talk to you again next week. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.